And this guy told me that morning when I went in there. He said, "You're the cowboy guy that's on show?"
Now, this is one of the competitors?
Yeah. I said, "Yeah, I reckon, unless they got nothing." He said, "Well, competition's real today. Don't be surprised if you go home first." And I just looked at him and said, "It's apparent to me you're a legend in your own mind. Just stay out of the way and we'll see what happens." Howdy, my name is Kent Rawlings. I've been a cowboy and a chuck wagon cook for over 30 years, cooking for ranches all across America. You might have seen me on the Food Network or alongside my beautiful wife, Shannon, on our YouTube show, where we share cowboy cooking from the trail. But now we're going to take you behind the scenes to real campfire conversations. Join us as we share humor, cowboy wisdom, and stories full of history, heart, faith, and of course, a little fire. So grab you a cup of coffee, pull up a chair, and welcome to the podcast.
Now, Kent, we had a really good episode previously. It was a few episodes ago, and we walked everybody through Bobby Flay.
Oh, yes,
you
Bobby.
And the throwdown with Bobby Flay, and kind of introduced you to the competition cooking world, right, on TV?
Yep.
We had a lot of great feedback, and so we thought, hey, let's continue the conversation, because that for sure was not the first or the last, or that was the first of your competition cooking, but definitely not the last.
That's right.
And I think everyone would really enjoy getting to hear about your experience on Food Network's Chopped. Ooh. And explore the Chopped universe.
I'd never even heard of that show, Chopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we had a casting director, a friend of ours, reach out and said, "Hey, Kent, we're fixing to do one of the Food Network's largest outdoor productions, Chopped Grill Masters. You'd be cooking over open fire. It'd be just what you love to do." And I said, "Well, I don't even know what this show is." She said, "Well, you have Shan pull up an episode and you watch it. And if you're ever not familiar with Chopped, it's where they give you this basket that's full of stuff that people like me can't spell the names of the food, but also have never seen most of them, you know. But they take a lot of chefs across the world for this competition. There was going to be 16. And
as you say, I really want to highlight, this was the Food Network's first and largest outdoor competition cooking, specifically on grilling.
Yep.
And what I did is, if everybody's interested, I found the episodes on Discovery Plus, and I watched them to kind of recap. So let's start with Chopped Grill Masters. This is season 12, episode 11. And as you mentioned, you get the call. You had been on the radar probably from Bobby Flay for the Food Network. And you have no clue what this is.
No, ma'am.
Lead us into what you were feeling. Like, did you do any practicing? Did you do anything to prep for this?
Well, I don't know if there's a way you could practice for this. I mean, I don't think they have grocery stores in most civilized places that sell the stuff that they got in there, you know. To me, it looked like a deal to where you were going to have to really get out of your element to cook. Not so much the environment, but food-wise, you know. But the other thing was the time. That's what was sort of bothered me the most, I think, because you're going to do three rounds. You have an appetizer, a main, and a dessert. Appetizer's 15, 20 minutes, something like that. And then dessert is 30. And, I mean, main course is 30, and dessert is 30.
Now, is Chopped legit in that breakdown?
Yes, ma'am. And when they start that clock, when Ted says, "And open your baskets."
So there is no, like, kind of behind the scenes editing or flipping or, like, even some lifeline help. It is all what you see.
Yeah.
Describe this set, because this is totally different from the normal Chopped. The normal Chopped is in New York City. It's in a kitchen, commercial style kitchen. This is nothing like that. And they tell you it's live fire.
Yeah.
So walk us through what you were feeling and how the set was designed.
Well, first of all, you leave motel room 4:30 that morning in the dark, and you get out there. But we were in this little adobe room, all of the foreign contestants that day. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd had three rounds that before I ever got there. You don't get to practice, but you cook something that you're going to show as maybe an intro the day before, you know. So we're in there in the dark, and I can't see even what I'm signing most of the time. I just sign it.
Yeah.
You know, sound comes in. They go to micing you up, and they say, we're going to give you a tour of the kitchen outside. It's dark as it can be, you know. And when we walk out, I can smell charcoal burning. So that was sort of the first thing that got to me. This is not live fire. This is charcoal.
I remember you also, when you were having calls with the producers before you even were involved in this, and you kept asking them, and you've done this on pretty much every competition you've hired on for after that. Is it live fire? What do you mean by live fire? And every time they've always said, oh yeah, it's live fire. It's great. It's going to be crazy.
No.
And when you mean live fire, what do you
I mean firewood.
Like wood, not charcoal, not gas grill, not briquettes. Yeah. Okay.
And they had gas grills and they had little Weber grills. And then they had this section where there's produce. And then they have a selection over there where there's spices. And then there's dairy products. And then they lead you back in there. And I rode bulls for a long time, competition and rodeos. And the adrenaline that you got from that, the push, the there's anxious, there's nervous, anticipation, and then there's dedication. And I would think to myself, I can get this done. But out there, there was so many unknown factors that I didn't even know what was taking place.
I don't think that we can even describe the level of pressure that happens on set. Now, I did go down with you in Tucson, and I just stayed in the hotel the entire time. Yeah, it was a completely closed set. I have never experienced anything more stressful in my life, and I was just sitting in a hotel room. So I can't even imagine the pressure there. You know, on camera, it doesn't translate.
No.
Like, you feel pressure and you know there's a time crunch and, oh, there's crazy ingredients. But that doesn't translate, right?
No, I don't think they get to see that. There's the pressure, really, of just all the unknowns. When we got back out there in the light, the judges, you can see them out there, and you're standing at your station, you know, and I'm looking around trying to figure out what's happening. They have water boiling for you that's hot.
Okay. The grills are already going?
The grills are hot.
Talk to me about the basket pressure. The basket is the great equalizer.
It's a game changer.
Right? And for those of you that haven't watched Chopped, there's a mystery basket that all contestants have, and it's full of mystery ingredients. Each person has the same ingredient, and you have to come up with whatever. Yep. So what is it like looking that basket before you've even opened it, and then when you open it?
You know, we had these three trial runs sitting up there. The basket was there, and it's Ted Allen, who's become a dear friend. He would say, now, okay, contestants, open your baskets. But they'd tell you, don't open them. We're going to do this three times, you know. You get everything, I guess, in the flow. But when it gets to that time, they would say, okay, this one's live.
Do it three times before as like a fake, and then?
Yeah. So when Ted said it that last time, and you open that basket, and they call out the ingredients that's in the basket.
Okay.
Some of them ingredients, I'm glad they had a label on them because I wouldn't have known what they was, you know. I remember picking out pork ribs that morning, you know, or beef ribs, I mean. But they always threw something in there funky, something crazy.
Oh, sure.
You know, that
your first round, I think you had speculoos, which is ground up
shortbread cookie.
No, gingerbread.
Yeah,
right.
No, and shortbread.
Oh, and then it's made into a paste.
Yeah.
And then
why would anybody buy it? Do you see it at the grocery store? No.
Did the basket reveal get easier each round you progressed, or you still had that like?
No, I don't think it's any easier as you go through the sequences. If you make it from one round to the next, like the appetizer round, there's going to be some type of protein in there, you know, you know, but appetizer was weird, you know, and you get to thinking in my mind, there's some things you can't cook in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. It really limits you.
And so my brain just goes back to thinking, how can I get this done as quick as possible and make it edible and use some, all, or a little bit of all of their ingredients? Had to be in there, you know. There's no time to second guess in 15 minutes. And I remember you telling me this, get it on the plate. So so many people, if you've ever watched it, didn't get it all on the plate mm-hmm. or left out an ingredient, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm going back through this as I'm trying to get it on the plate, and Ted's over saying, you got 2 minutes. And I'm thinking, what happened to the other 13, you know? And I get it on the plate, and I look at it, and I think, it's edible.
So I want to talk about what I think was the hardest part for you was the plating, because presentation and plating is one of the judging factors for Chopped. And you have the three judges. And of course, they're looking at creativity, taste, and I think plating are the yeah. three main. And yours was interesting.
Well,
it was a little thrown together.
It was in a hurry is what it was.
Well, and it's funny. So I've got some notes here where you said, you know, present it to the judges and they're like, okay, this is really good. We love it. The flavor's great. Plating is a little lacking. And you said the food should be hearty, and you don't cook really appetizers on the wagon. No. And so you said they're not asking for an appetizer. They're asking for a recliner.
Yeah. And one of them kept telling me, Aron Sanchez, he kept telling me, he said, you know, if you're going to go through this competition any further, you're going to have to dress up your presentation. And I said to him,
You give us your line, because this is a great one.
Where I come from, if your food is good, they'll eat it out of a hubcap or off a shingle.
Yep. You never had to decorate a plate to get someone to eat it. So that was probably your biggest criticism.
Yep.
And I think you did work on it.
Oh, yeah.
Afterwards, as much as you can. Because again, like when we're on the wagon, it isn't about presentation. So this was a totally different aspect to you. I do want to ask you. So Aron Sanchez uh-huh. was one of the judges.
Yeah.
And after that first round, when he had criticized, they had all criticized your plating.
Uh-huh.
And Aron said, hey, cowboy, just work on your plating. You need to dress it up and make it look like a nice gal.
Yeah.
And he said it, tell me if I'm wrong, to me, it felt a little condescending.
Yeah, like it did to me. And I told him, and they didn't put this part on there.
Okay.
But I told him, I said, I think what you're trying to say is gussy it up. That's what we, you know,
yes.
term an old cowboy to sort of dress something up. And I told him, I said, you can put a blanket on any horse in the world, but when you pull it off, it's still the same. Mm-hmm. What he looks like. And I said, cowboys will eat my food every day. But that part wasn't on there. I mean, I'm not the editor. Right. I don't know what they're going to put in there. I know they're going to change your facial expressions at time, but nah.
I think with when they brought you on, and you had told me this, they cast you as the cowboy cook because it was an outdoor grilling competition in an Old West town. They needed a quintessential cowboy.
Yep.
They did not expect you to really do much. They wanted the character, yeah. right?
After the first round, a friend of mine who became a friend, Chad, got chopped, went home.
Yeah.
And as we're taking, they take you back to this room every time after it's over. Interviews. Interviews were the longest thing ever, mm-hmm. you know. And as I was going out of there, one of them sound guys says, our money's on you, cowboy. And I said, don't bet on a horse tiller. You know what he can do. And he said, we know what you can do. I made friends with the sound people always first mm-hmm. because they're just good folks. All of them were. And then the camera people. But when you get back there in a room, this was the thing that really got me. You know, we sat down there. And you're going to go back through this your first appetizer round. And this gal asked, she said, so can't tell us what you cooked and all this. And I did. And she said, tell us when you looked around at all the other contestants' food, who you think needs to go home. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm not a judge. I don't make that decision. Well, whose food do you think looked the worst? And I just looked her straight in the eye. And I said, ma'am, if you're going to ask these questions, these interviews are going to be real short. I'm here to cook, I'm not here to judge, and I'm not going to criticize people. That's all I got to say, so if you want to go another route, we'll sure do that. And things totally changed after that. I think she learned, because you see it so many times on them shows, oh, that guy, he couldn't cook, or he dropped this, or he shouldn't be here. It's not my place to judge people in life. That's God's job, not mine. But I'm not going to let someone on national TV tell me, this is what you got to say. Oh, that's it. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Can't, you know, with the changing of seasons, I don't know if this is for everybody, but when that happens, sometimes I feel a little off or feel a little down. And also, we all just got through tax season. Finances can be a little stressful. And so if you're struggling with finances, it doesn't mean you failed. If you're feeling a little down, that's perfectly normal. And that's why it may be great to look at BetterHelp. They are an online therapy service, all 50 states. You can get matched to a therapist that meets your needs and your goals, and just give yourself a little fuel to feel better. You don't always have to rely on fixing it all yourself. I don't know if you remember, but I used BetterHelp after we had gone through some tough times. Even like I was just struggling with some business things, trying to get organized. And I just thought, you know what? I need somebody outside who doesn't know what's going on to give me some real like third party advice. And that's why I tried out BetterHelp. And what I really loved is that I did a questionnaire and they matched me with somebody specific to what I wanted. One of the big things is I wanted a Christian therapist. Also, what's nice, if maybe you're not clicking with your therapist right away, you can easily switch to another one to find somebody that really fits your needs.
And we all need help at times. You know, just don't be afraid to reach out. Mm-hmm. And you don't want bad help. You want better help. And that's where it's at.
BetterHelp has over 30,000 fully licensed U.S. therapists, making it the world's largest online therapy platform. They have served over 6 million people globally.
A short questionnaire matches you to a therapist based on your needs.
When life feels overwhelming, therapy can help. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com/cowboy. That's BetterHelp.com/cowboy. What were the things happening behind or on set, behind the scenes from production? Like, were they telling you to do certain things or say certain things?
Well, they didn't so much tell you what you could say on that, but they told you where to stand, where to be.
Sure.
When it got time for judging, and they've got all these plates covered up, you know, and then they take the covers off of them, the judges explain your dish, but they say, walk up here, and they got these ropes laid out there on the ground about this long and a T about like this. That's where you stand. Every time you stand at the same spot, you go to your same station. This old road that was in there was a gravel, dirt, and it got big old rocks in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd kick rocks all day, moving stuff around to where I had to step or where I was working, I wasn't stepping on a rock because
mm-hmm.
I didn't want my feet to hurt. But there never was, I mean, they can't at any time during the competition say, oh, hold up, we want to ask you this. They're not going to change the time. They're not going to stop the time. They're not going to say, oh, wait a minute, you know.
Redo
got
this.
His arm off. We got to stop this.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
so
never
it is
going to happen.
It is very real.
Fast and real.
Okay. You had told me an interesting story, and I think you were going into it, about when they're judging. They hold up cards?
Yeah. I didn't realize this when first going on. And the set out there, I mean, it's outside.
Yeah.
And I noticed after the first round when we come back, I mean, it's chilly out there early in the morning. This was in March. But in the desert, it's warming up pretty quick, you know. And we get out there for the next round, and they're still working on setting things up for this appetizer. I mean, for the main course round. And here comes this guy in, and he's got this, I thought it was like an air mattress, you know. They get it on the ground, blow it up. It's an inflatable cloud.
Oh. You know,
just to block the sun.
Oh, that would be nice.
And I'm thinking to myself, Shan'd love to have one of them.
Oh.
It'd be good in filming, you know. So they get it all up there and judging all these things. And they would stand back behind. And after the judges had went back through that, you would look back there and there would be somebody holding up a card. I couldn't see.
So you're standing in front of the judges.
Yeah.
And behind you is standing somebody with a big card.
Yeah.
Raising it up behind your head.
Yeah.
So the judges can read it, but you can't.
Yeah, and what all it says is two words. Each card.
What?
Positive or negative comment. Like, Oh, yeah. His food was good, but he didn't plate it good.
So it's signaling the judges to make more comments a certain way, either positive or negative about your dish.
Yep.
Okay.
I met a lot of good people out there. A lot of the crew, a lot of the camera folks, the judges. But as I get to the third round, I'm thinking to myself, because you told me you will feel comfortable when you feel fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still thinking it's about half fake fire, you know, but it's fire. So I did feel a little better, but this that started at 4:30 in the morning is now like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, this
it's a long day.
And interviews. And it begins to take a little stress on your body,
mm-hmm.
and you get to thinking, we've made it this far. I ain't gonna quit now.
Yeah.
You know, I was a little shocked to be in the dessert round, you know, because these people are chefs. I'm just an old wagon cook.
Right.
You know, and when it got to dessert round, I'm thinking, just go for it.
And here's the funny thing. Before Kent even started this journey, when we were just talking about it and talking about all the different ingredients, I asked him, what would be the most terrifying ingredient that you could have in your basket? And you said tofu.
Tofu.
And what shows up in the third basket?
Tofu.
Yep. So what are your initial thoughts there?
First of all, I'm thinking, I would love to know the lady who made the grocery list.
And I'd and love hunt to, her down.
I'd love to take her to town and show her what you're supposed to buy.
Yeah.
You know. But these people work on these baskets. I found that out for a long time.
Yeah.
Can this work? Can this work? You know.
Yeah.
They're genius, smart people, but they're also food smart.
Yes.
You know. But when I seen it in there, and you had told me, you said tofu is like a sponge. It'll absorb the taste of anything else. Everything's supposed to be cooked on the grill. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I put a piece of tofu on there. Right through when it got hot. I figured you can't grill it, but you just, I might have put it in cast iron skillet, you know. And they had a lot of cast iron. A lot of it wasn't seasoned well, but there was a lot of it out there.
So you ended up making a cowboy banana split.
Uh-huh.
Are you in your groove at this point?
I'm thinking I was, but, you know, they give me plantains.
Yes.
And I remember telling them, because when I put this all together, it had a mango. Then it had some weird ingredient. I can't even remember, some kind of strawberry tequila something.
Yes.
You know, I put all this on the plate. I made it sort of like hot damn fried bananas in a way, mm-hmm. you know. And they look at me and they say, this, cowboy, you may not have ever seen this, but this is not a banana. I said, looks like a nanner. I'm going to call it a nanner. That's what it was, you know. And I tasted it. I couldn't.
It's they keep saying it's like starchy. It's almost like a root vegetable more than a fruit.
When you cook it right and you got enough sweet with it, I didn't find no trouble. But I know when it come right down to it at the end, and they said I was the winner of that round. I looked across there and I'm thinking, first of all, thank you, Jesus. And I'm thinking, I made it.
What was your feeling at that point when they cut Rick? And now you have won your round, and you are going to the finals.
Yeah. I'm thinking you sort of have a little better idea of what's going on now.
Yeah.
It's been a really, really long day. There's not a day off before tomorrow. I don't know who I'm cooking against. Don't know what's in any of the baskets. But I remember telling them at the end there that first day, he said, do you need anything? I said, I need my cell phone. I need to call my wife. I said, I just need to tell her, you know. And it was 9 o'clock before we get back to room that night.
Well, it was tough because, okay, so yay, you win and you're on all this high and then you have to go back and do more interviews, right? So how long were you in interviews after that?
Takes forever, you know. And I'd sort of learned by going through a half a day of them already, you know, sort of what they were wanting. But they had learned, too, what I'm not going to give them. And that was, I'm not going to begrudge anybody. I'm not going to look down on anybody. But Rachel was very sweet about it. She learned real quick.
Rachel was your interviewer?
Yeah. And the cameraman in there, George, they were all good. But you go back through the whole day even after mm-hmm. you get through, not just that round, you know. So I figure you was in there an hour and a half, 2 hours, you know.
And that's another thing about the reality cooking world is they want drama.
Yeah.
And they want to poke you to get to say mean things, maybe. And we've talked about this. Like, that's one thing you always do. You always stand up for what you believe in, who you are, which is really hard in these situations, especially at that time, because this was a big deal.
Yeah.
And this could have had a lot of implications for our business, for opportunities. And so it's very easy to respond to these people in power and say, okay, yeah, whatever you want, whatever I need to do. And you didn't. Why didn't you do it?
Because that's not who I am. It's not what I stand for. I grew up knowing that you have to not only be what you are, but portray it every day, show it. And if you change at one instance, whenever there's a camera on or you're in an interview, you're not that person anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a cameraman by the end of the day that come by there and he said, you know, Kent, you're the only guy that I've put a camera on here that don't never change. Sometimes you don't even look up. And I said, I ain't changed socks in a week. I ain't gonna change personalities. If you're out there, whether it's a competition of life or a competition of food, and you've started this and you're working hard, put your heart into it, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Pray about it. But don't change and be something you're not. Just be who you are every day and let people see that. They appreciate real.
And I think you definitely took that spirit and mentality in to the final round. So here we go. And this is where it gets real.
Yeah.
Because I think in a lot, so there were four competitions rounds where one person made it through to then go to the finale. And I think a lot of those first rounds, they are you are getting maybe more novice cooks, different personalities, but you get to this final round and you have some all-stars. You have Sam Choi, Ray Lampe, Ernest Cervantes.
Yep.
Are you feeling a heightened competition at this point? Or are you just like, hey, I'm just me. I'm just fire and let's roll with it.
I didn't know who none of them was.
Right.
Never heard of them. I remember getting on the bus and I knew it would be different today because the competition would be more fierce. $50,000 on the line.
Yeah.
You know, but I wasn't just cooking for $50,000. I was cooking to show people across America and whoever was watching that there's a breed of people out there called a cowboy that can survive in anything that you put them in, can cook anything you throw at them. Might not know how to spell it, but I guarantee you we know how to cut it up and put it on fire, you know. And this guy told me that morning when I went in there. He said, you the cowboy guy that's on the show today?
Now, this is one of the competitors?
Yeah.
Okay.
I said, yeah, I reckon, unless they got nothing. He said, well, competition's real today. Don't be surprised if you go home first, you know. And I just looked at him and said, well, I don't know you, and I'm not trying to be rude to you, but it's apparent to me you're a legend in your own mind. Just stay out of the way and we'll see what happens.
Is that when you kind of realize, like, oh, okay, this isn't friendly fire anymore?
No, I mean, I think the man out there that impressed me the most out of the whole series was Sam Choi.
Mm-hmm. And why?
He's gracious. He was kind. He's a great cook. He used to design all the meals for American Airlines, first class, you know, and World Foods. And he was just a very caring man, you know, and you could see his heart. I didn't know the other two, but it was a competition where I knew if I'm going to get through this deal, I've got to cook better today than I cooked yesterday. It's like you go to a rodeo and you draw a bull to ride. You ain't never seen him before, but at least you can look at him, you know, before you get on him. And baskets, you don't know what's in there.
So you make it through appetizer.
Yep.
You make it through the main course.
Yep.
Have you surprised yourself at this point? Now you've made it to the final dessert round?
Yeah, I mean, appetizer round was nearly went home. You know, I don't like sardines, except I eat them in a can.
That was, yeah. So sardines, was that appetizer round?
Yeah.
You sauteed the sardines, but didn't remove the bones.
No, but when you pressure cook them in a Dutch oven, it's just like buying them in a can with bones.
But that, yeah. So that was kind of the one criticism there.
And, but when it got down to where there's just two of us, you know, I remember taking my hat off and just looking up and saying, thank you, God, for getting me this far. I just could be with Shan and just give me the strength to do one more. And by that time, you've done been through the interviews again, but it's come down to it to where there's two people. One of them going to win $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
One of them going home. You know, Shan, cooking all these years with a wagon, ain't no telling how many grocery lists I've made. I think I get tired of probably going to the dentist and the grocery store as much as anything. You know what I mean? But when you can have the convenience to have it be on your front porch and not have to go to the grocery store, Shan,
it's
a big deal to me.
It's super nice. And with Omaha Steaks, what's really great too is they have a variety of different cuts that a lot of times you can't find in the smaller markets. So it's fun to see what you can purchase and get delivered.
Yeah, I mean, it's grass-fed, grain-finished, USDA beef. But it's not just beef. There's salmon, there's pork, there's chicken. I mean, it ain't like you're just one market. You went to the whole grocery store and it come right to you. And I'm all about not having to go nowhere if I don't have to. And if it can get delivered to me and it is quality and saves time, I'm all in.
You know what the other thing that I've done is when I have to do gift giving and I'm run out of ideas, I've actually purchased and sent Omaha Steaks to people. And what's nice is they have little curated packages of different varieties. So you can just pick one of those and send over and then you're the hit of the party. Omaha Steaks are naturally aged 28 plus days for maximum tenderness. Grass-fed, grain-finished beef. Filet mignon and top sirloin fillets are USDA certified tender.
They have unmatched variety. Burgers, chicken, pork, seafood, desserts, and more. All frozen at peak flavors and individually vacuum sealed to reduce waste.
Omaha features flexible plans delivered on your schedule. No more last minute grocery runs or tossing spoiled meat. Taste the Omaha Steaks difference and never settle for grocery proteins again.
Get flavorful, high quality proteins delivered by visiting omahasteaks.com. Plus $35 off when you use the promo code CowboyKent at checkout.
That's omahasteaks.com, code Cowboy Kent. Terms apply. See site for details.
That last round, after they judge desserts, then they send you back to the little jailhouse, the sequestered room, you know. And then you come back out there, and those two plates that they've judged, his and mine, are both covered. And whoever they uncover is the one that is chopped. That means adios, sayonara.
You're eliminated.
You're finished.
Now, spoiler alert, folks. They pull off the dish and your plate is there and you have been chopped.
Yep.
What is your immediate gut reaction?
It broke my heart in a way. You know, at the time, me and you were taking every job we had, trying to survive. Living in a teepee more than we lived in a house.
I remember we were trying to figure out how we were going to buy gas because we had to drive from North Texas all the way to Tucson. And there was no funding from Food Network, right? Like, they covered the hotel, but everything else was on us.
I remember just trying to hold tears back, you know. And there was a lady judge there, Amanda Freitag.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember her crying when they had, you know, she went through this deal.
She was the one that chopped you. And I don't ever remember a judge. I haven't watched a ton of Chop, but her crying because they had to chop somebody.
And I knew she had, I mean, they all have big hearts, but I knew she had that heart to see something, not just a cook. This guy was heart, soul, and dedication into what he did in life. I remember Mark Murphy said, you know, I've really been amazed by the way you cook. Whatever we put in these baskets, you don't know what it is, but you just keep cooking it. And it's simple. And I just stopped him right there. And I said, sir, life is simple. Cooking ain't. Y'all trying to complicate it for food. We're not. And when they said, you got anything to say? And I said, it's been a long way from the Texas Panhandle and all them ranches in an old teepee around a wagon for 20-something years at the time to get to here. I hope y'all learned something from Cowboy.
Mm.
And
I think I hope it was felt to the viewer as well. It was an extremely emotional chop.
Yeah.
Even the camera crew was tearing up because it was, everybody had followed you on this journey as this underdog.
Yeah.
And now you've come to the finale and you just keep surprising people. And I think everyone was shocked.
I think they were surprised. I got through the first day, you know, mm-hmm. but to end up there, and there was the camera and the crew. There were so many of them that were giving me an attaboy and patting me on the back, you know, and telling me, you taught us a lot about life. You know, you got that never give up attitude. And whatever somebody throws at you in life, you can get through it if you put your heart and soul in it. You prayed about it, because there were so many times that I'd be so tired of standing out there just waiting for everything to happen that I'd just squat down and I'd say, God, give me strength to get through another hour.
There's a great story about what had happened after the final, after the cameras are off. Tell me about that.
Mentally and physically exhausted, you know. We could have done a lot with that money. It would have helped us a lot. Mm-hmm. And it was this close to being in my hand, you know, and then it's took away. And after we got through with that and we walked over there fixing to do them interviews, they said, we're going to give you about 30 minutes. I said, Rachel, I need my phone. I need to call my wife. I need to tell her how much I love her. And I was sitting there and there was one of the sound guys come by and he said, Kent, do you need anything? And I looked at him and I said, I'd like a cold beer and three friends to drink it with. And he looked at me and he said, we got you covered.
Mm.
And I know they were busy.
Mm-hmm.
But there was three guys come up there and sat down with me, and we just visited. Wasn't about Chopped. It was about just having a good time.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when the interviews were over, and I went in this big room, the production room, to gather up all my stuff, you know, to go back to the motel. I walked in there, and they all clapped.
Oh.
You know.
Jeez.
And I looked at them, and I said, I gave y'all everything I had for 3 days. I said, now y'all are going to give me something. And they just looked around. Everybody got really quiet, you know, like I was asking for $100. And I said, that's your friendship.
Oh.
And they all said, yeah. But I can remember that long ride back to the motel, which is just 4 miles. And the first thing, it's sort of hard for me. The first thing that was in my mind was, did I let Shan down?
Mm.
I was this close, but now it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just falling in your arms when I got in there. And you held me so tight. And you said, I'm so proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
And, but when you go through something like that, and there's a lot of times in life when something happens to you and you get to replaying it in your mind.
Oh, of course.
And this took forever to get out of my mind. Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Yep.
You know? But that was filmed in March, aired in August. It opened the door
mm-hmm.
for so many things. And a guy told me one time, many, many years ago, people can win first, but you got to be really gracious to win second.
Mm-hmm.
And people remember who you are. And for a long time, everywhere we went, people say, hey, you're that guy's on Chopped.
Yep.
You know? I'm grateful that we got that opportunity.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it was our first really big, it was bigger than Bobby Flay still.
For sure.
You know, and we met a lot of great people, but I'm glad that the Food Network reached out to us to give us that chance. And I think they learned something right then after we got through. That cowboy can cook and he's pretty good people. You know, we might keep him on the radar.
So Kent, what do you think was your biggest takeaway or lesson learned from these two Chopped episodes?
I think more than anything else, I've said this before and I'm going to say it again. If it don't challenge you, it won't change you.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a great challenge here. Every 20 or 30 minutes, you know, there was a different challenge. But people face challenges in life. And there's a lot of y'all out there today that may be listening that are feeling challenged or feeling left out, or you have health issues or something's wrong, you know. The one that got me through it, first of all, was God. Second one was this beautiful woman right here that stand beside me. you're not alone in any of these things. I may have, at times when I was in that competition, I felt like I was standing on an island all by myself. But I had a picture in my billfold that you had took from me. One of them little ones. People don't even carry pictures in the billfolds no more. And it was of you and the beagle. And when I would get in for them, one of them interviews, or before I'd start around, I couldn't have my billfold, but I could have that picture. And I'd pull it out and I'd say, thank you, God, for these two. I love them so much.
Like, do you have any advice for maybe people who have are looking into getting in the food competition or really even any kind of competition within their field?
Be true to yourself, first of all. Don't change your method or your, I mean, you may have to change your method of ways of cooking, but
maybe adjust, adapt
who you are to do it and put your heart in it, you know, and have a good time. Did I have fun doing this? Not through some of it till it was over, till I'd realized what I'd done. But I was always, you got to focus on not just the start of the story, but how the story might end.
I'm going to leave everyone with a little bit of a cliffhanger, too, because this wasn't your only Chopped.
No, ma'am.
You got another call to do a Chopped Redemption, and this was going to be filmed in New York City in the commercial kitchen, which obviously is not your cup of tea.
Sure not.
And it was wild. So I think let's save that for a future episode. So... everyone stay tuned for that one because that one is pretty juicy too.
Yes,
and I've got some interesting questions for that. But again, everyone, thank you so much for joining us every week. These are fun. We get to hear Kent's stories. Such great feedback from you guys. It's wonderful. And I have to say, I curled my hair if you're watching on YouTube. Because I got so many comments about how people liked my curled hair. So thank you for the fashion advice.
And remember, you're not fans, you're family to us. But it is with pride, honor, and privilege that I tip my hat to all our servicemen and women and all the veterans that have kept that old flag flying. We lift you up in prayer daily. We thank you so much for your service. Rest of you, hey, we're just glad to have you. Don't feel like you're alone because you're not. Invite us over for supper. I ain't doing the dishes. God bless you, and we'll see you down the podcast trail.
Pioneer.